It was a privilege for me today to hear the Honorable Lawrence Tribe. You know, somehow lawyers just resonate to his messages about access to justice. It was just a great privilege, and I want to reinforce a few things that he said because they fit with what I want to talk about. The first was that knowledge should have practical application. I went to the Ben Franklin Institute almost monthly, was a member when I lived near Philadelphia because of the incredible knowledge, practical knowledge that institute provided for my children. So Ben Franklin talked about that all of our inquiry should have a practical application, and I commend that to you, both in terms of practice and public policy. I think that that the closer we get to offering guidance to both, more valuable your research will be, because we will actually be talking about it and using it in more familiar ways, I think. The other thing that he talked about was soft knowledge. Soft knowledge is very useful, and in this field, you'll see how we have built on soft knowledge. And we who are practitioners and policymakers, must learn to better appreciate the empirically derived knowledge. So both of those are knowledge, and so I appreciated his addressing that. And the third was that, and I'm not quite sure what he was talking about, the person-focused versus the problem-focused research. I look forward to having further discourse with him about that, because I think that much of what practitioners are interested in may be a combination of both of those. So anyway, let's start. I want to start with the oldest researchers in the field, just so that you can have some familiarity with them. And so the check mark means that they weren't, these were newspaper reporters, these two women at the top. And back in the 70s wrote Battered Wives, and first started talking about institutional misogyny, a very important construct as we shaped both public policy and practice in the future. Then Strauss, Gelson, Finkelhor did the conflict tactics scale, which has shaped discourse and debate for the last 40 years. Very important work. Lenore Walker was incredibly helpful in focusing responsibility for intimate partner violence on the abuser, rather than talking about the masochistic, psychologically impaired woman who invited the violence in her life. And so it was an incredible contribution to shift the view towards the perpetrator, and then to talk about battered women syndrome. And the asterisks that, when it appears on these slides, for me, talked about researchers who engaged in close collaboration with practitioners in doing their research. So Lenore was very attentive to the input of both policymakers and practitioners in doing her work, as are the Dobashes, but I also suggest to you that their work on patriarchal roots and gendered violence certainly has informed the discourse in the last 30 years, as have Stark and Flitcraft's work on injury prevalence. And then this last person you don't even know, unless you're from New York, in a certain part of New York, because she's a judge. At that time, she was a legal services attorney, and she first identified separation violence. It wasn't you all, researchers. It really was practitioners. She was in legal services and noticed that the women who came in to get for divorces that were on these long, horrendous waiting lists that will hopefully be reduced if Lawrence Tribe has his way, they will actually get to see a legal services attorney in their divorce. She noticed that something like 50% of the women who came in to get divorces had been battered. And it helped shape protection orders. I mean, Marjorie was the one who gave us the idea that protection orders, independent of and attached to divorce, would be very critical. So that was the very first decade of... And these are Barbara Hart's view of who did the research that was created the foundational construct. So this is the second decade. You can see it was very rich. I want to start with the top, Susan Schechter, our dear beloved and passed on friend who really, she wrote in 1982, or she wrote on little 3x5 cards a book that is still the seminal, if you will, book on the shaping of the Battered Women's Movement. It's an incredible history. And she, in that book, she also charged us to listen and learn from battered women and activists, and to spend some more time. So that's the listen and learn that, you know, what that Eleanor Lyons was talking about. Listen to what battered women want. Susan was talking about this way early. And she also asked us to begin to look at class and race, because we were not, we practitioners and policymakers were not doing that well then. We still aren't doing it well now. And that research, I must give a little plug to the Violence Against Women Journal, because it is one of the few journals where the issue of race and class and ethnicity and immigration and LGBTQI, they just don't trip off the tongue, what can I say? Those things are explored, where, and they aren't explored in other, haven't you subscribed, you might want to, it's the most, I think, a practitioner policy-friendly journal, so you might want to consider it. Anyway, if you have extra money in your budget, the Violence Against Women Act funds will pay for it. We go down here. I want to go down to Ellen, which is down, Ellen Pence, which is down sort of in the last one-third. So this is the person that among any of the researchers on any of these lists has clearly focused on practical application. Michael's here too. So Michael has been her partner in this wonderful journey for the last 40, almost 35 years. And Ellen is so clear about the importance of taking the information that's there and applying it to answers to questions. Right now they're doing evaluations of custody. They're looking at custody evaluator products in order to figure out what's good and what's not so good about those products, and to inform practice about that. So Ellen has always done that. The other thing that it's important to know is that you can have some fun doing some collaboration with practitioners. Michael will be able to remember this better, because it was more of a traumatic experience for him. But when we were creating power and control, when we were thinking about power and control, we were at Ellen's house, where we had no plumbing in the middle of winter. And a whole bunch of us sat around and we talked about, so why do men batter? And I think that sort of it was the genesis of this. And it was a shift in thinking, frankly, for Michael and Ellen to power and control from where they were before. And the stories about this are really quite amusing. But I won't embarrass Michael or myself with those stories, except to say that, you know, these collaborations that we are commending to you, I am commending to you, can be fun as well as onerous. And I think many of you in this room may feel that they're onerous, whether you are practitioners or researchers. They can be quite entertaining, actually, and they can give you lots of stories for later. I'm going to move to the next. These are all important constructs, and the reason that they are listed here is because I think they shaped both research and practice for years to come, and they still are shaping much of the thinking that we're doing on all of these issues. Richard Burke's the Criminal Justice System Resistance to Response. All of these, then David Ford's work on victim agency and engagement in criminal prosecution, and the utility of criminal prosecution if victims were engaged and were interested in pursuing criminal prosecution. So all of these people begin the thinking on all of these subjects, and we have derived much of our thinking from them, both in agreeing and disagreeing with them on a bunch of things. I'm going to look at this list, and I'm going to pick out only one. There's so many people that I would like to talk to you about, but I don't have time to do that. I'm going to go to Ed's work on two things on this slide, but there was one on the slide before as well. This is the measuring batter intervention effectiveness slide, where he began to look at the context, not the program itself, but the context of the program, the context in which the program was embedded, the criminal legal system. And you heard earlier about sure and swift consequences. I mean, one of the things that came out of Ed's work was that unless you have a system that embeds the batterer program in it and, in fact, does deliver sure and swift consequences, predictable, sure is sure, isn't it? Okay. Anyway, Ed was the first to help us understand the importance of the context in which this kind of intervention program is embedded. And he also was very responsive to a couple of practitioners who informed his work. He is very much of a collaborator. That he really needed to measure the success of batterers programs in terms of the outcomes for battered women. And so that unless you could demonstrate that there was well-being for battered women on the far end of batterer participation, not just in VIPS, but also in the criminal legal system, then you might want to question the utility of that intervention. Okay, so that's a decade. Whew. Now we're in the 2000s. Some of that was violence against women research. A lot of that on the prior page was violence against women research, as was much of this. And so we have some new measures that have come out in this last year that I'm particularly interested in. Marianne Dutton's coercive control measure, Adrian Adams. Okay, one of the things I didn't tell you about Ed Gondolf is his early research in the 80s was on shelter study. And it concluded that one of the findings was that if victims don't have access to economic resources like childcare, transportation, housing, etc., they're likely to return to the batterer. It was the greatest predictor of reconciliation with batterers was whether women had access to economic resources. And Adrian Adams now has created a scale of economic abuse, which helps us build the argument for economic resources as an essential intervention or contribution in terms of services and advocacy to battered women, and that without that kind of economic resource, battered women will find it very difficult to establish independent and safe lives that are stable and secure with their children. Jim Potasek is now asking us to look at restorative justice. This has been a no. This has been heretical. I mean, many things are heretical, but this has been heretical too. And so he has begun to ask us to look at restorative justice as it might be utilized in the domestic violence field. I've been in many debates about this. This is really an exciting, I think, direction to pursue. Andy's work is on probation efficacy is renowned, and among the other things that Claire talked about earlier, I think the JODI research, the Judicial Oversight Demonstration Initiative, that was funded by OVW, and the research that was funded by NIJ helped us understand the critical importance of judicial leadership in a legal process. We have had reluctant judicial participation in this work for many, many years. And in the last 10 years, we've begun to see them to step to the plate, and this research helps us understand how important that is. And then Pat has done the earliest work that I read on stalking, and that was her study of the DIVERT process in Colorado Springs and the failure of police officers to understand, to recognize stalking when it was in their face. They just didn't understand it unless it was a violation of a protection order. And it had to be that obvious. We have many police officers who are still not recognizing stalking when they see it, we are working on that. He didn't know I was going to get to this slide, and he didn't read it before either. So this is, I do want to, this is not my end slide, but thought I'd tuck it in here and before he would tell me my time was up. I want to just express my great appreciation, as I know yours, for NIJ, particularly for Bernie and Angela, who have shepherded this work so faithfully and so carefully, and I think with impeccable care to the critical issues that need to be answered. So thank you for your excellence in all of this. Thank you for including practitioners in the discourse, in the selection, in the review, etc. I think this has really been a rich dialogue, and I'm hoping that we will continue in this fashion as we add the access to justice. I'm so excited about that. The access to justice research that's coming down the pipe. Now, so there are challenges to this dialogue and collaboration. There are infrequent venues for us to talk, and if we do come to these venues, then we have all these people up here that do the talking instead of you. We have different, as Connie talked about it, different understandings in language. That DV is my IPV. You know, what can I say? I'm an attorney and I'm of the field, so I don't do IPV very well. I almost have as much trouble with that as the LGBTQI. Okay. We don't have very many practitioner-friendly publications. We don't understand what you write. And as a consequence, we do factoids. Richard is right. We do factoids better, we practitioners and policymakers do terrible factoids. And it's because we really don't grasp what you're telling us because you write it in your own journals and you talk to yourselves. Okay. We have many formal educational differences that make it very difficult. And you can read the rest of this. I think that we don't even talk about participatory action research. So since this is being recorded, I want to say the words again. Participatory action research, in which we engage the participants as well as the practitioners in design through dissemination. It's really important. Okay. Now, I'm almost there, Bernie, actually. So here are some opportunities. You can get the Violence Against Women Journal. You can come listen to my audio conferences, or you can even volunteer your research for my audio conferences and webinars. The Minkava website has much of this up there, as well as, you know, I mean, the obvious is to look at the NIJ and the NCJRS stuff, but these are additional pieces. There's an interesting research collection that I bet you don't know about if you're a researcher, and maybe not if you're a practitioner. And that's the National Domestic Violence Resource Center has solicited writings from various researchers on various topics in which they do a full analysis of what's out there. So you need to publish in our venues. You need to consider doing RSS feeds to us, practitioners, about your products. You got to go to the blogosphere, and I don't, but you can. And I went there last night to try to figure out how to spell the word, and it could be with either an O or an A in the middle, just so you know, both are correct. Okay, so here's what I think needs to happen in the future. Just a few things that aren't done yet. We have a lot. Prevention is up at the top because it fit the slide. Not necessarily in any order of priority is my listing here. But I think it's really important for us to look at all the many questions that remain unanswered and to engage in those. So I think that's the end. It's been a privilege to throw these many ideas at you. Look forward to your questions.